It's Tuesday, October 27th. About half the vote is already in. But which half? We start here. Exactly 1 week from Election Day, a record 60 million Americans have locked in their votes.
We have numbers high enough that we're not just talking about staunch partisans here.
Each side is reading the tea leaves, but which numbers matter and which don't will get you primed for the week ahead. The Supreme Court is full again, but could it get even fuller?
You saw hashtags of expand the court.
How last night's confirmation vote could play in November and beyond. And we've been scouring the universe for signs of water. It was sitting there right over our heads.
On the sunlit zones of the moon, there's actually some water there.
The dramatic discovery from researchers and why scientists are over the moon about it. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
You voted, that's it.
One week. We are 1 week away from Election Day. But in many ways, all the unknowns that we've been talking about this year since the COVID-19 pandemic upended everything, we're getting a pretty clear preview of how this will work in many states.
Lawn chairs, something to drink, and of course, a mask. These are voting line essentials because the wait time to cast a ballot is...
a three-hour process to get in now.
It's been 3 hours.
2 hours and 20 minutes with still a while to go.
The line starts...
with poll workers showing up in smaller numbers, we wondered if people would feel comfortable voting in person, waiting in line. Well, we're getting our answer.
I really want to do it in person.
To see the long line and the queue is fantastic. I don't mind standing in that line.
We also wondered if there might be heightened tensions nearby polling places. In some rare instances, we have seen that too.
What we have here are two armed security guards who told responding Pinellas County deputies that they were hired by the Trump campaign. Now, campaign officials today denying that claim.
None of this, though, has really been enough to deter people. In fact, even questions about the security of mail ballots.
Boston police releasing pictures of a man they say intentionally set fire to a ballot drop-off box
have largely shown that there's more accountability than you might have expected. In one case, where 100 ballots were flooded with fire hoses, most of them were still able to be processed. Authorities were also able to notify voters whether they would have to do it again. So as these massive, massive early voting numbers continue, what does it mean and what does it say about who's going to win this race? Let's start the day with a guy who interprets data like this for a living, the host of the 538 Politics podcast, our friend Galen Druk. Galen, can we talk about the 538 forecast? Because a month ago, your forecast gave Biden an 8 out of 10 chance of winning this election. That's now gone up to like 8.5, almost 9 out of 10. Is that because Biden is doing better in the polls, or is he just doing the same flatlining and there's less time for Trump to turn it around?
Well, it's actually both reasons. If you look at the national polling towards the end of September, Biden had about a 7-point lead nationally, whereas right now he's in between a 9 or a 10 point lead.
You know me. I am not overconfident about anything. I just want to make sure we can earn every vote possible.
It's expanded a little more nationally than it has in the swing states like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona. But it's also important to understand that the forecast basically says there's a certain amount of uncertainty built into this race for every day until the election.
And you watch these polls and you say, oh, this is terrible. They're fake polls. They're fake. They're total fake. These are real polls.
Essentially meaning that some news event could happen, something could break, and it could change the dynamics of the race. And so the further you are out from November 3rd, Election Day, the more uncertainty is built into the forecast.
I got to the polling place at 9 o'clock in the morning. I got to the voting door at 4 p.m.
Well, okay, so then you look at these like bonkers numbers for early voting. You see these long lines. Does that actually give you any sense at all about what it means for the candidates?
So traditionally, we tell people not to try to focus too much on early voting numbers, but there's a couple reasons we tell people not to focus too much on it. One, you can't actually know who people have voted for. You can only see their party registration, and that's only in some states. And for example, in many states in the South, a lot of people are still registered as Democrats, but may vote for the Republican candidate.
And in the states that report party affiliation, 22 million registered Democrats asked for mail-in ballots, but only 13 million registered Republicans did so.
The other thing that we know is, according to polls this year, pollsters have asked voters how they plan on casting their ballots. And overwhelmingly, Democrats have said they plan on voting by mail or voting early, et cetera, while Republicans much more strongly prefer to vote day of and in person. And so if you do look at the numbers, you dig in and you see that more Democrats have cast ballots so far in this election, that tracks with what people already said that they were going to do, what Democrats already said that they were going to do. And if you look at polls of people who have not yet voted but plan to vote by election day, that skews much more towards Republicans.
Wait, but really, though, Galen? Because, like, I'm sorry, everyone's wondering, you know, could Biden possibly win Georgia? The primary concern is, will people actually show up to vote for him in Georgia? Will they just stay home? Do they even care? Well, then, guess what? Millions of people end up standing in line. How is that not great news for him?
Well, one thing that, you know, we generally also say about early voting is that the people who vote early are staunch partisans. And so those were probably the people who were going to cast a ballot anyway.
I don't trust the drop box. I want to make sure.
Who are going to wait in those long lines and who had already made up their minds. In other words, they're not undecided voters.
The early voting now underway in every state. And the number of people who've already voted is nearly 60 million and climbing. That's blown past the total early vote in 2016 with 8 days to go.
In this case, we have numbers high enough that we're not just talking about staunch partisans here. We're also talking about likely people who were more marginal voters.
When the virus initially hit, neighbors, friends here in my community, we made over 1,000 masks for the hospitals, nursing homes, friends, and it was a lot of work. And then he had the disrespect to not even wear a mask.
And those votes, of course, have been cast during a period of time where Trump has done quite poorly in the polls.
Judy, you're a registered Republican.
Correct. Yep.
Obama, Trump, and now?
Now Joe Biden.
And so as Biden, to have those votes under your belt while Trump has not been performing well on the national or swing state stage, I would say is a good thing. It means that even if there's a late-breaking development in the race, a lot of votes are baked in.
Which states seem like they're going to be the difference at this point? Are there particular states that you guys at 538 have your eye on more than others?
Absolutely. And we would refer to them as the likeliest tipping point state. So essentially, it's on election day, after all of the votes have been tallied, or in this case, perhaps after election day, you look and see which state was the one that gave the winning candidate his 270th electoral vote.
By the way, who's voted here so far? Oh, that's good, because, you know, Pennsylvania is a very late voting state, which I like, actually.
Right now, we say that's likeliest to be Pennsylvania.
We've got to blow them out. This is the whole ball game. We got to blow them out.
There's also a good chance that it could be Arizona.
You have to understand, I'm a senior. It's one of those things. I'm a senior, too.
Also a good chance that it could be Wisconsin or Nevada. Another important state would be Florida.
I'm going to be going to Iowa. I'm going to Wisconsin. I'm going to Georgia. I'm going to Florida.
But in the final days of this campaign, you've seen, I guess, both Biden and Trump going to states like Iowa or Georgia, even Ohio. Those actually are not likely to be the states that put the winning candidate over the edge. Those are more Republican states, which means that
he's not going, you know, there to eke out the win. He's going in case he thinks he can slam dunk it.
Right. I mean, Biden plans on going to Iowa. That could be because there's a competitive Senate race there more than because of the actual presidential race.
That blue wall has to be reestablished.
But if you're focusing on which states are going to decide this thing, look at Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Florida. And speaking of Wisconsin, last night we got a decision from the Supreme Court that the deadline for accepting ballots in Wisconsin, mail ballots, is not going to be extended past November 3rd. And so, you know, if this is a close election, if it comes down to the wire, then we are going to see a lot of litigation surrounding these issues, like whether ballots that come in late should be counted, whether or not a ballot has the correct signature. So we could certainly see these kinds of vote by mail issues become contentious if this is a very close race.
Yeah, that seems like one of the biggest unknowns here is we can talk about polls, we can talk about turnout. How many votes are actually counted? That is the number we're really going to be paying attention to. Galen Droop from the 538 Politics Podcast. Thanks so much, bud.
Thanks a lot.
And by the way, the decision about ballots in Wisconsin, that came via a 5-3 Supreme Court vote. because there were only 8 justices. Well, now there's a 9th. And if you thought that was a win for conservatives, they're probably about to get a lot more. Last night, President Trump got a win that is locked in regardless of what happens November 3rd.
The nomination of Amy Coney Barrett of Indiana to be an associate justice of the Supreme Court of the United States is confirmed.
For all the back and forth about the timing, the precedent, the past words of Republicans, last night Amy Coney Barrett became the newest member of the U.S. Supreme Court. Let's bring in ABC's Catherine Falders, who covers Pennsylvania Avenue. Catherine, this vote was largely along party lines.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The vote was 52-48, largely along party lines, except for Maine Senator Susan Collins, who voted with the Democrats. Now, we expected that. We expected it to be along party lines. But the one person we didn't see at that vote, who usually would preside over the vote, would be Mike Pence.
5 members of Vice President Pence's team are now currently infected, including the vice president's personal assistant and his chief of staff, who is almost always by his side.
He didn't end up being there, but the vote happened, and then it went to the other side of Pennsylvania Avenue.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, accompanied by Justice Clarence Thomas and Justice Amy Coney Barrett.
Wait, Catherine, can we talk about the fact that like, this big COVID outbreak at the White House before, the one where the president got it, those dominoes seem to start falling at the last big celebration there, which was for Amy Coney Barrett. Like, that was literally, that was for her. And now he's going to invite her over for another in-person gathering.
Yeah, Brad, you remember Dr. Fauci even called that first event where the president announced that he would be nominating her. Dr. Fauci called that a super spreader event.
With dozens of cases already linked to the White House, it's unclear how many of the potentially thousands exposed have contracted the virus. Republican leader Mitch McConnell revealed he's been avoiding the White House for months because of what he suggested were lax safety measures.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Brad, I was talking to sources about this event who were calling this round two. Some people were saying they weren't going to attend this event. Look, it was different. The chairs were spaced out and masks were required.
I now ask Justice Thomas to administer the oath. Thank you very much.
And Justice Thomas administered the oath of office to Judge Barrett.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
The duties of the office on which I'm about to enter.
The duties of the office on which I am about to enter.
So help me God.
So help me God.
And Brad, this is the most conservative court in some time with the confirmation of Barrett.
A judge declares independence not only from Congress and the president, but also from the private beliefs that might otherwise move her.
This means 1/3 of the Supreme Court will have been appointed by President Trump.
Today, President Donald Trump delivered on one of the central promises he made to the American people.
And have no doubt, the shoe was on the other foot in 2016. They'd have done the same thing.
Republicans view this as a big win. I've been out on the campaign trail with the president recently. And when I ask supporters who why they support President Trump this time around, they say because of the court.
Supreme Court nominees, that was my issue last time, too. And he's done just fine. You know, he's got a lot of good people on the courts.
So Republicans, you've seen many of them, say this is a big deal. This is a huge win. And by the way, even if the president loses the election, his supporters say this still shapes the judiciary and the Supreme Court for decades.
And the next time the American people give Democrats a majority in this chamber, you will have forfeited the right to tell us how to run that majority.
So what happens next then? Republicans got what they want, Catherine. Do we know how Democrats would respond if they end up taking power here?
So, Brad, immediately after this confirmation vote and the swearing in, you saw hashtags of expand the court by Democrats who want to expand the court. This is the question the Democratic ticket has been facing for some time.
I have not been a fan of court packing because I think it just generates what will happen. Whoever wins, it just keeps moving in a way that is inconsistent with what is going to be manageable.
So you're still not a fan?
Well, I'm not a fan. I didn't say it depends on how this turns out.
He's been asked multiple times whether he would, quote unquote, pack the courts, whether he would add more Supreme Court justices to the courts. That's a question that he still hasn't answered for weeks.
Right. If elected, would you move to add more justices to the Supreme Court?
If elected, what I will do is I'll put together a national commission of bipartisan commission of scholars, constitutional scholars, Democrats, Republicans, liberal, conservative.
He's formed this bipartisan commission that's going to kind of assess whether or not he should expand the court.
The last thing we need to do is turn the Supreme Court into just a political football. Whoever has the most votes gets whatever they want. Presidents come and go. Supreme Court justices stay for generations.
So there's this bipartisan commission that he says, look, we'll figure it out. He says he's going to give them 180 days if he's elected president.
Yeah, he said it would make a decision before Election Day. That decision turned out to be to create a commission. And now, 6 months from now, he says that commission would actually give a concrete recommendation. In the meantime, later today, Justice Barrett will take a second oath that actually makes her an active member of the Supreme Court. She can start working on cases. Catherine Falders, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, forget titanium. The most valuable substance in outer space is plain old water. Well, now we found some. What do we do with it? Feel the gravitational pull of the other side of the break.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Whenever you think about life on other planets, one of the key things that always seems to set Earth apart is we have water.
I gotta figure out a way to grow 3 years worth of food here on a planet where nothing grows.
Liquid water, baby. It is the key building block that we have and others don't, at least thus far in human history. We have not really discovered it in many other places. So how rare and special we are, right?
Thank you for dialing into today's Media Telecon on our latest discovery from the Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy, or SOFIA.
Well, yesterday, in a bombshell announcement, scientists said they have found much more water than they ever thought possible on the moon. Yeah, our moon. Let's dive into what this means with our partners at National Geographic. Maya Wei Haas is a science writer for Nat Geo. Maya, first of all, what? Like, there's water on the moon?
Yeah, for sure. So scientists have long suspected that there's some form of water on the moon. And the two new studies really address sort of water in different regions of the moon.
Several studies have showed that water on the moon's surface is in its permanently shadowed craters. Today, we are announcing that, for the first time, water has been confirmed to be present on a sunlit surface of the moon.
One is really looking at these sort of sunlit swaths across the moon, and we're not talking rivers or lakes here. This would be water stuck to the surface, like molecules of water stuck to the surface of tiny grains, or sort of encapsulated in beads of glass.
And now it appears there is much more water on the surface of the moon than anyone ever knew.
And in 2009, instruments on three different spacecraft confirmed that there was indeed water-like signals in these sunlit portions of the moon. The problem was that these early analyses couldn't tell the difference between water and a related molecule, hydroxyl.
SOFIA's infrared spectrometer was able to identify the chemical fingerprint unique to the water molecule.
So one of these new studies kind of tweaked that method. So they actually can now say unambiguously that, yes, on the sunlit zones of the moon, there's actually some water there.
But how did it get there, though?
For sure. So water on the moon, it can arrive in sort of two different processes as far as we know so far. So one of them is possibly through meteorite impacts. It can carry water along with them.
Wow.
The second is actually, I think, kind of wild, is that it might actually be able to form somewhat in place. So the solar winds bring hydrogen to the surface, and that sort of interacts with oxygen, and that can create hydroxyl. If it gets hot enough on the surface of the moon, those hydroxyl molecules can actually sort of smash together to form water. Or it could also happen during meteorite impacts, and that sort of generates a lot of heat and can potentially sort of cause those reactions to happen. It can also cause those water molecules that form to be sort of melted inside the glass that forms during those impacts.
Thanks for taking the question. Kind of touched on it there. I mean, this is an amazing discovery, but how much is there? Will it matter? Will it provide for astronauts if we need to mine it? Thank you.
Yeah, so the amount of water is roughly equivalent to a 12-ounce bottle of water within a cubic meter of lunar soil. But
so, okay, great. There's water. We've always thought about like what water on another planet would mean. We've seen ice on other planets before. We've wondered if that could like be either a sign of past water or like what it meant. Now there's a new study out in addition to this one that says there's also lots of ice in parts of the moon. But why do we care though? Like what would this mean for us, for humans, and for the universe going forward?
Right. So one of the primary things that's brought up when people talk about water on the moon is the potential for future humans traveling to the moon or beyond, the idea of sort of this permanent lunar base that often comes up. And this includes NASA's upcoming mission, the Artemis mission.
That's like if we're living there, like we need water. So it's nice that there's water up there like to drink instead of hauling bottled water up there?
Sure. And this is not always necessarily to drink. The main thing that is generally talked about when we're talking water on the moon is the idea of using it, mining it for fuel. So if you split them apart and liquefy, you can actually produce fuel that can be used. And yeah, it's super duper expensive to bring stuff up to the moon. And so if you can find a resource that actually replenishes itself on the surface, that would be pretty amazing.
The future begins now. All right. Maya Wei-Haas from National Geographic. Thanks so much for breaking this down.
Thank you so much for having me.
And one last thing. You've probably heard about the new Borat sequel in which Sacha Baron Cohen reprises the role that made him famous around the world.
Yak Shumash. My name is Borat.
By coming back to America and starting up absurd and sometimes revealing conversations.
What is more dangerous, this virus or the Democrat?
Democrats. Democrats.
But the one thing that struck me as I watched it was poor Kazakhstan.
14 years ago, I released a movie film which was great success in USA. But Kazakhstan becoming laughingstocks around the world.
Even though the Borat character is from Kazakhstan, Cohen did not consult with leaders in Kazakhstan, even when he describes them as backwards, sexist, and anti-Semitic.
Very nice. How much?
He actually films the foreign scenes in Romania, and when his first film became a sensation, the Kazakh government threatened lawsuits and denounced him around the world. This time, they're taking a different approach. They're capitalizing. In a series of tourism ads, the country has created a new slogan describing Kazakhstan as, you guessed it,
very nice.
Officials say they decided to lean into it this time, an implicit acknowledgement that they might have made the problem worse 14 years ago. And hey, now I know about the hiking and the Zeleny Market, which I didn't before, and it looks, well...
it's very nice.
We said a week to go till Election Day. Remember, if you're going to vote, have that plan in place. Know your polling place, your ballot drop-off location, whatever you're doing. 538 has a whole guide to walk you through this for all 50 states. The link for that is in our show notes today. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.